Hosted by Ed Steer and Dan Bolter, Life in Digital explores the ever-changing media landscape with today's industry leaders. Our sponsors, The Digital Voice, are a much-loved B2B ad tech PR agency. Ready to bring your voice to life with PR, marketing, events, content, and much more? Looking to amplify your brand's voice? Look no further than The Digital Voice. You can visit their website, www.thedigitalvoice.co.uk, to find out more. Hello and welcome to the Life in Digital podcast series. I'm joined here today by Emma Lacey, who is SVP EMEA at Zephyr. First up, Emma, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
On a rainy Thursday.
It's very rainy. I'm sorry, I look like a drown rat, but thank you for inviting me in. It's great to be here.
And I know you was in LA recently.
I was last week. Yeah, a little bit different weather. Well, for the first few days, but it did rain on the last day. And in fact, it rained a lot more than it is today. So it's comparable.
Did it get fun? My first meeting this morning was with someone who is English, but lived in LA for 10 years, and she was back in London, so I was catching up, and she had one of her team from LA over, and it's been quite nice this week. So she was saying, London isn't usually like this, so she was glad to see the rain, so she could say that this is what London's really like versus LA for her team who were over.
Whereas my boss, Rich, when he comes over, he's like, oh, the weather here is awful. In LA, it's always sunny.
Yeah.
It's always a bit smug when it's raining. We're like, not always.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Emma, actually, just for our audience who haven't met you or haven't come across Zephyr before, it'd be great if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and about Zephyr.
Yeah, so I'm the SVP for EMEA at Zephyr. I've been at Zephyr a couple of years now. And what do? Well, we kind of specialise in brand safety and suitability in walled garden environments. And what that means is, so UGC content, social platforms, although we include YouTube and that has multiple definitions, but the purpose of this is a walled garden.
Yeah.
And what we're trying to do is resolve how do brands navigate those platforms and the plethora of UGC content that is generated within them safely and suitably. So not all brands have the same mindset when they're looking at advertising and the type of content they're happy to be adjacent to. And for us, it's, you know, how do you get transparency, or how do you, you know, create more robust campaign strategies using that kind of intelligence of it's brand suitable for, you know, whatever your preferences are. And ultimately, you know, making sure that when you're investing significant amounts, as they do on platforms like TikTok and Meta and YouTube, that, you know, you're making sure that your brand is being seen in the right places, the places you intended them to be, engaging the right audiences, delivering the right outcomes, but ultimately that your suitability preferences are constantly being adhered to.
Yes.
And if anything doesn't quite go to plan, that you at least have consciousness of it and you're able to act.
Okay, yeah. So that's really fascinating and really cool. And I can see how actually from the way the market's going and where brands are investing their money, it must be super hot because social is just such a growing channel.
It is, but it is always, you know, as with anything, you know, when you're investing in advertising, outcomes are incredibly important.
Yeah.
And so you will have brands who are incredibly conservative. One impression is too many, you know, and if we look back, you know, really where this started to become a problem within walled gardens was in 2017, when there were some challenges around content that was being picked up on YouTube. And lots of brands were kind of caught up in that story, and it was like, okay, we need to actually have more controls and understanding of where our investment is going. In the open web, there's been, I guess, a more established solution, and I think
across brand safety.
Yeah, you know, and it became a prerequisite with programmatic, right? Suddenly you're using tech that was not your own to sort of figure out and optimize on your behalf. So therefore you needed to make sure the content was good and legitimate. And when you're talking about you know, content that's probably being generated by journalists, you know, it was very editorial heavy at the beginning, you know, it was a much, in many respects, an easier problem to solve, but one that was definitely prioritized first. When you get into these closed ecosystems, you know, people are logging in, there's a lot of controls that the platforms implement themselves. There's been a lot of trust, and there should be trust. They're doing a really good job, or a much better job than they were in some instances. But ultimately, when you are figuring, well, there's a lot of users there, they're potential customers for me and my brand, I spend a lot of money and many years cultivating a brand that has values and equity with the potential consumers. I need to ensure that where I'm appearing and what content I'm appearing in front of or after is appropriate to what I kind of stand for as a brand.
And within Zephyr, is it an optimization platform or is it all measurement?
So we kind of do a little bit of both.
Okay.
Some of it really depends on which platform. So we started out working with YouTube and we were a TMP partner. We recently integrated into the Ads Data Hub, and what that means is that we can play pre-bid and post-bid. So we're looking at, we could create contextually targeted campaigns, which was the origination of our business, but now we can also measure and then kind of like attribute actions off the back of that. So once we know what happened, you can start to make your campaigns more custom to what your needs actually are. And, and then you can monitor the performance, right, and see what's working, what isn't working. And so for us, we work quite differently to other brand safety or brand suitability technologies in the market. And we have a very specific approach, which is we're only going to focus on the walled gardens. We think the others do an incredible job in the open web. But we also think the scale of these platforms like YouTube and Meta, like there is a big problem potentially to be solved, and we want to be able to work with those platforms to help give brands those confidence to, you know, when they're kind of investing in them. And the other side of it is that we had this legacy technology, which was always AI. So AI is the buzzword now, but we've had it for years. And our AI was looking at how do you label content, originally in terms of contextual, but as we became a brand safety and suitability partner with the different platforms, we now align with GARM. GARM, for people who don't know, is the Global Alliance for Responsible Media, and it's the industry standards. And for us, it's really important to have industry standards, not standards that we're making up. We want to make sure that you have that consistency, and that as a brand, and many of these brands were involved in GARM, you know, that you're actually talking the right language. So when we're looking at content and we're moderating content, we need to be able to do it at an enormous scale and then obviously label it probabilistically. That's not an easy word to say.
No.
But what that means is that we need to be able to predict accurately that this content is X, Y, and Z. Does it contain a weapon? Does it contain nudity, profanity? Those sort of things, which are really important when you're
And that's based on the image and the text?
So, yes, we are built for video.
Yeah.
That was our kind of foundations. As it happens with some of our other platforms, we look at other things as well, like Meta. But yes, for video, it's looking at the whole video, the audio of the video, the transcripts, the some of the text that sits behind it. But we think that when you're looking at video content, some of the traditional tools, which were very keyword heavy, can only go so far in these environments. So TikTok has very little text. And so to understand what that video is about becomes quite challenging if you're only looking at the script that's around it. So we built the technology to be able to do that. But the key component for us is that is what is training the AI. So everyone's talking about generative AI at the moment. You know, that's kind of everything that exists in the internet, basically. You know, that's what you're training off. Well, we and LLM models are talked about a lot as part of that. Now, what we do is we use human moderation to be able to train our AI. And that's a real differentiator for us as a business, but also what we think, I just think it's really important, right? You've got to make sure that when you're looking at video, the nuance of it, the intent behind it is can be very subtle. And so sometimes it takes a human to be able to go, you know what, this is actually not appropriate, this is actually a fake, this is something that is politically misleading, and therefore you want to make sure that you've got some human element feeding into the AI to then be able to predict in the future for future trends that they're recognising in the future.
And how does the human element come into that at that level of scale?
So we have three different ways of doing it. So we use human crowdsourcing.
Okay.
So we literally just pay people to watch video. Does it contain a weapon? Yes or no? And we use that data, we mark that data to make sure with our internal policy team, which is our second step, to make sure that actually when we're, that it's all being measured appropriately, that actually the scoring is right, we agree with it, especially in line with GARM, and that we're constantly marking our homework. So we have that.
So how accurate is the tech?
Yeah, because the thing is, things change.
Yeah.
You know? And if you look at something like Russia invades Ukraine. You might have been looking at Russia as a holiday destination, and then in that moment, it suddenly changes what that piece of content might mean to the consumer and therefore the brand that is appearing around it.
Yeah.
And so you want to make sure that you can be fast and pick things up that could be potentially problematic as quickly as possible. Nothing is 100%, but the more robust your approach is and the faster your approach can be, you know, the more accurate it is going to be when you're kind of running these campaigns. And so we have our internal policy team. And then the third thing that we have is we specialize in misinformation. Mm-hmm. And we acquired a business called AdVerify about 18 months ago now to do that. And their approach was really similar to ours in terms of using human moderation and AI to create this predictive modeling for brand suitability. But because, again, misinformation is talked about quite a lot at the moment because of the year of elections, but ultimately it is really subtle, and intent and understanding what could be classified as misinformation is not easy to do. So we have hundreds of fact-checking organizations all around the world helping us to build those scores and train our AI on this.
Yeah, and AI is getting so smart, and so with things like deepfakes, where does that leave us?
So we have actually been spending our time trying to handle this. So we've built an image recognition tool. To start with, we've done it on politicians, so we know that
they're a top target at the moment.
Exactly. So if we will be able to recognise, and it's training off real images and fake images so that our AI can start to pick up and then identify it and classify it in the right way. And then it'll be able to say, well, actually, is this picture of Rishi pouring a pint really badly, is it true or not? You know, and most people saw that image, and most people laughed about that image, but actually
it was not real.
No, it wasn't real.
Oh, right.
And so we're picking up hundreds of thousands of pieces of content around the world at the moment, and obviously the American elections are getting huge headlines at the moment. And again, some of it can be fairly, you know, sort of mundane and silly, but some of it can be really quite harmful and misleading.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so the first problem is just being able to flag it. Is it a fake? And so, you know, this is something we're going to be continuing to refine over the coming months. But we're not just looking at it from the politicians, although that's where we started with the technology. We're looking at things like brand misappropriation. So brands are getting caught up in some of these problematic stories. So with what happened in October with Israel and Gaza, a lot of particularly American brands were starting to be used, their logos were taken and they were created as kind of quite damaging images, stories about them. And we're now working with brands to be able to help them recognize that. So if you have your logo, where is it appearing? And do we think that it's appearing against some of this potentially harmful and damaging content? And so these are the new sort of ways that we're working around misinformation. So it's a bit of an evolution, but we're just trying to go not just flagging it that it's misinformation, but actually what type of misinformation is it? And what should you do? And actually, it's kind of interesting. We have some clients who will take the opinion that we want to know, but we don't necessarily want to do anything about it, because this kind of content spreads really fast. It goes very viral, and the more that people are getting likes for it, the more that other people will replicate it and share it, because that's how social works.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it can be there, but let it disappear into ether, and it will, you know, it's not...
It blows over.
It blows over. And if you take action, then potentially that's its new story.
Yeah.
But there are also instances where it's incredibly important that you, firstly, you're able to identify it, and secondly, that you can work with the platforms to be able to remove it.
Yeah.
And so it's a very, like everything in brand suitability, it's a very personal and brand specific approach as to how we kind of navigate that with them.
Is the outcome, and this might be completely unrelated, is the outcome that a deep fake or misinformation is identified in the moment and removed by the platform in the moment, or is that just not viable?
It's not as dynamic as that.
Yeah.
So I would say, so on YouTube, it can be very quick.
Yeah.
Depending on whether a brand is using Google Ads, whether it's CV360, and that's kind of just the way that partners like us have to kind of navigate that with existing tech. When it's measurement only, so for example, with our TikTok and Meta tools, firstly, we're flagging it.
Yeah.
But quite uniquely to us, we are acting as training data for TikTok. So when we identify it, it feeds back into their mm-hmm. algorithms, and then they start to customize that. In the future, we will not allow that kind of content to yeah. be adjacent to that brand. There is always that freedom of speech element, right? So if it's something that's, so brand safety is just almost like, is it not a full violation? Mm-hmm. If it's safe, if it's not a full violation. So all that really terrible, gratuitous stuff should never be there in the first place. And it only very occasionally gets through.
Yeah.
Platforms really are on top of this stuff yeah. these days. But with brand suitability, it's not really just about that. There's kind of no risk, low risk, medium risk, high risk, right? High risk is pretty bad.
Yeah.
So no brand is going to go, I'm okay with that. But we have lots of brands who are comfortable with medium risk, because medium risk in the form of...
often in the eye of the reader, right?
Well, because profanity or maybe a weapon is actually a movie trailer and it's James Bond, you know?
Yeah.
Or it's, you know, it's something that in the form of entertainment, if you are
it's
a
context.
Brand... yeah, and that's why brand suitability is so important, because it's what's right for maybe some of the brands that are looking at younger, you know, kind of less serious audiences, that it's okay for them to be adjacent to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're a gaming client and you're releasing, you know, a gaming, a new game that has violence in it, then you've got to be kind of realistic as to what
you're all right with James Bond.
Yeah, they're looking at. Whereas, you know, there are, as I said, there are some very conservative brands, and rightly so, who that just cannot be palatable, and therefore
mm-hmm.
they have to take no risk. And that means that anything that we identify that could be low risk is still going to be flagged
mm-hmm.
and said, look, that didn't fit your preferences. Now, low risk is like in the form of education. So if it's a weapon, it could just be a documentary about World War II
yes.
and a weapon happens to be in it. So it's not necessarily that it's damaging, but you just need to be aware of it. And what we see over time is that brands will refine, and some will loosen, some will tighten their different approaches, and also across the 12 different categories that GARM have. So,
are you able to identify the context of, if there's a situation with guns, are you able to identify the context of there's a gun in this piece of content, but it is because of it's a movie trailer, it's because it's a gaming trailer, it's because it's... as
yeah.
opposed to, you know, a less good version of that.
So there's kind of two things that do that. Firstly, whether it's low, medium, or high risk will give you an indication.
Yeah.
And then there's obviously the 12 categories. But the way that we present all of this data in our UI is that you watch the video yourself.
Yeah.
So we flag it. We said it's unsuitable against your preferences.
Yeah.
Is it unsuitable? So play around with it. Have a look. If not, if you agree with us, if you disagree with us, you can tell us. It goes back into our training data. And so we're constantly working and refining on that. But the ultimate goal for us is to make it as easy as possible for buyers to just see what they were adjacent to.
Yes.
And so we give them that they can play it and they can search by suitable, unsuitable, and everything gives you a definition. So you just kind of understand at all stages what this really means.
Yes.
And you know, some of it changes depending on the day.
Right? Yeah.
Like, you know, something can happen. That is a bit of a zeitgeist, and so it could be something funny, it could be something serious, and that will obviously influence where your brand was shown or what your brand was shown against, and therefore what you're going to kind of think about that piece of content.
Yeah, and I guess one of the great things about social is brands have an opportunity to have dialogue with their consumers, and in the moment, whether it's humour or, you know, jumping on a bat, there's good in the moment campaigns that you can
yeah.
get right or wrong, I guess.
Exactly. And you know, that's at the experts of the brands and the media buyers, and you know, to kind of figure out what they want to do, but they
yes.
have to have access to it.
Yes.
And actually know what it was. And you know, for many years that just wasn't possible. I mean,
mm.
we were the first to do that across Facebook and Instagram
mm-hmm.
last year, and you know, it's been really...
And there's so much scale to manage. I mean, the scale is just like out of this world.
And there's also been a lot of trust and legacy trust, you know,
mm-hmm.
that they didn't see it, but they trusted that it was all brand safe and suitable. And you know, the majority is, but you do, it's like having travel insurance. You hope you're not going to lose anything, but sometimes you do.
Yeah.
And so you need to have that. So, and it's the same thing, you need to have that ability to actually understand what's going on. And then you need, and now we're building out tools to be able to action off it. So how do you create block lists? How do you start to make sure that once you understand what you're adjacent to, you can do something to make it better in the future?
Yes.
And the problem is, and you know, AI is fantastic, we're talking about it all the time, but generative AI and things like DALL-E or ChatGPT have put tools in the hands of everybody.
Yes.
And you know, we're making more content than ever. We are, you know, as people who use those platforms, anyone can do it. You know, and so you can't be sure of the legitimacy, the accuracy, the fairness of that kind of content that's being uploaded.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're just looking at the creator level and you're an approved creator who specializes in makeup tips, but suddenly something happens in Israel and Gaza and you have an opinion, like, you've got to be able to go down to that video level and not just say, well, 99% of the time this person is a creator who specializes in health and beauty, but now they have an opinion that something, you know, kind of socially, politically,
very sensitive.
Yeah. And it might not be accurate. And so you need
and
to be able
to
brand.
It.
And suddenly your brand has been aligned with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are these, it's a kind of cyclical thing. It's always on, there's always potential problems.
Mm-hmm.
But we have just made it so easy with this great technology for everyone to be able to be a content creator. And that in itself means that you need really good technology that can identify it and analyze it. And you know, the platforms themselves are taking more and more responsibility. We have things like the UK Safety Bill and all of these standards that are being implemented to help them be as responsible to their consumers as possible. But there's also that kind of consciousness that it you need a third party to also be helping and facilitating some of this for the brands.
Yes.
So that it feels like it's, you know, they're not marking their own homework, or that, you know, ultimately it's just giving that different perspective. And,
yeah.
You know, I think, as I said, it's very established in the open web. It's newer in these kind of walled gardens, but it is essential.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really fascinating, actually. So the brands have got so much to consider in advertising. We've just run a very, I guess last year we spent quite a lot of the podcast on sustainability and advertising,
yeah.
Which is, you know, something for brands to consider. When it comes to actually generative AI and misinformation, it sounds to me like level of awareness in brands and level of concern. Where is this in their pain point?
Yeah, so we kind of rolled it out about this time last year, and you know, this massive kind of fanfare. We were very excited about it, and mostly, you know, everyone was like, "Oh, this, yeah, we're talking about it. Yeah, we are interested."
Yeah.
But I think last year was quite a challenging year. I mean, for many.
Any full stop.
But
yeah.
You know, there were some big things that happened,
mm-hmm.
And as a consequence, and there were some big stories that came out around content adjacencies within some of these platforms,
mm-hmm.
And I think ultimately it became just more of a problem. And like now we're entering in this year of elections, and we know that one of the biggest challenges around misinformation is kind of like propaganda and, you know, kind of people with very extreme views,
yeah.
Propagating their views,
yeah.
With, you know, in not the most logistical.
Is that equally prominent both sides of the pond?
Well, it's Brexit as important as Trump. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
We know that legacy has, and history has shown that it can really influence.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you know, I'm not expressing an opinion on these things, but these are, you know, big topical issues that have challenged our economy, and I think, and challenged our industry.
Yeah.
And brands need to be able to ensure that in most instances they're not being attributed to right or left or having an opinion or appearing against, you know, potentially harmful content.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I would say that this year it feels much more important.
Yes.
And you know, I think
there's a huge year. We've got two elections and
well I mean globally,
yeah.
There's like there's billions of people or something that are going to be voting this year.
Yeah.
And so it's an incredibly interesting time,
mm-hmm.
Because with, I mean, if we just take, you know, the UK, everything is indicating we're going to have a change in government,
mm-hmm.
But to be able to kind of, for, you know, you and I to make the right decisions when we're voting or to be educated and informed in it, we need good content sharing that we're consuming. But what we know is that whereas, because I'm old, I might go to a traditional news source or watch, you know, Channel 4 News or listen to a podcast or something like that to get informed, we know that younger people are going onto TikTok. And if they're talking to each other, who knows what they're saying and what's right and what isn't and how extreme their views are.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's being able to give people the platforms of freedom of speech and be able to share and, you know, have the community that they have within these environments, and that's really important. And you know, they're good fun, a lot of these platforms, but
they're
there are underlying and undercurrent risks,
mm.
That when it comes to politics, you know, you don't quite know what is being said and whether it's fair, and you want to make sure that people are, you know, that you're, that, and brands aren't funding the bad stuff.
Yes.
You know, and they're not being adjacent to things that they are not comfortable being adjacent to. Now, many will block news and politics by default.
Yeah.
But as I say, things can slip through based on miscategorization, or, you know, it's, they're okay with it, but suddenly, you know, it's someone with an incredibly extreme view that is definitely not aligned with their approach to sustainability, or, you know, kind of where the political system should be focusing. So I think it's, you know, it is very pertinent this year. I think it's incredibly important alongside the generative AI explosion and how people are using those tools, because to your point earlier, it's not just text, which is ChatGPT, things like DALL-E are doing video and images, and everything's getting smarter. You know, originally, when I would do presentations last year, and you might pick an image out and it's like, you know, a cat with six legs or something. And, you know, so it's very easy for everyone to go, that's a fake. But actually what's happening is it's getting so much better.
Yes.
And it is becoming harder to know what is and isn't real. That it's, it, you know, and brands do not want their logos being, you know, kind of used within these sort of images against their, you know, without permission. So I think it's, there's lots of potential problems that arise as a consequence of, you know, AI and misinformation and politics and, you know, the economy and all these things that are coming together at the moment. And it's a global problem, so it's not just here. I think, you know, we're going to see it in the US first, just because their election is before us.
Yes.
But this is, you know, we know that, that we're in an interesting period of, you know, polarizing views. You know, where there's economic uncertainty and unrest, and, you know, people sometimes act more emotionally.
Well, it's always, of course, you know, it's always a catalyst for discontent, isn't it?
Exactly. And, you know, it's not about influencing, it's just about making sure that what is being consumed is legitimate. And as a brand, that you're not funding content that you are not happy to be funding and to be aligned with. So, you know, all of that will continue to exist. I think you can't, you're never going to solve all of these problems. But from a brand's perspective, it is about their adjacency and making sure that, you know, these creators aren't encouraged to keep creating this kind of content because they're not making money.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. So when you're speaking to an agency or speaking to a brand, what are the kind of the questions are flying at you? Because I'm sure they'll, what are the key steps you encourage agencies and brands, little brands to take?
Yeah.
If they want in particular to kind of disinformation and generative AI?
I mean, it's sort of such a kind of big question and also quite an individual question. I think it really depends on how forward thinking they are as a brand, how much they have leaned into certain platforms, certain formats within those platforms, and what actually a lot of the, what their business outcomes are as well, you know, what they're measuring. Is it, you know, very much performance driven, or is it a lot about kind of their brand and their synergy with the right content and, you know, in front of the right eyeballs? You know, there's a lot that goes into campaign strategies, and I'm on the sales side, so I'm not going to tend to be the expert, but I will say that, you know, you need to make sure that your ad dollars that you're spending and high volume and high scale in these environments are doing what you intended them to do. And so the first thing is having that level of transparency. That's incredibly important. The second thing is then, you know, well, actually, what controls can I put into place? What can I do that's actionable off the back of that transparency and knowing where my brand has been? And then, yes, when it comes to these areas of AI and misinformation, you know, what are you doing that is a little bit different? And we are the only brand suitability business that kind of has really spent a lot of focus on misinformation. And I think, you know, it's very smart for us to sort of predict that this was going to be
getting ahead of that curve.
So we know that kind of is a standout solution, and we're getting more and more brands saying, help us figure this
out.
Yes,
I'm sure you are.
And then also because, you know, yes, AI is this huge buzzword, and it's good and it's bad and there's all this sort of polarizing views, but ultimately it's making sure that you understand what businesses are mean, what it's actually doing, you know, what the training data is, you know, actually how accurate or, you know, how useful are these different tools. And then when you're looking at content specifically in that kind of AI space, you know, just really understanding that this, the scale of this problem is only going to get bigger. And so, you know, work with the platforms. They've got amazing inventory filters. They are doing, you know, from Meta, TikTok, YouTube, all of them really do a great job at keeping the really egregious content away from your brand. But it is about the subtlety of your brand preferences that you want to make sure you are aligned.
You've got control over.
Yeah.
Maybe it's going to be such a big year. We'll have to sit down in February next year.
Yeah,
how does the world look?
I don't know. It's like last year was just crazy and seemed to go on forever and then be over in a heartbeat. So I don't know.
It's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's exciting. What I do think is that there has been a huge shift towards these kind of tools. You know, businesses like ours, and I think we're all challenging each other to be better and better. And I think that's a really important change to when you're looking at social environments and social content, that, you know, you shouldn't be treating them exactly the same as the open web firstly, but that it is as important as the open web for having a solution in place to try and resolve the risk of, you know, kind of naughty content being aligned with your brands.
Yeah, great stuff. All right, well, thanks so much, Emma. It's been really, really fascinating.
Thank you very much for having me.
Are you in Cannes this year?
Yes, we will be in Cannes, just kind of working out the details now, but we will be taking some of this narrative. I think, you know, we'll have some of the misinformation kind of stories and data that we'll be able to share. We're looking at this and working with lots of agencies and brands to sort of cultivate some interesting narratives, so we'll be sharing.
Well, it's really fascinating. You've got the visuals, you can say, you know, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to, you know, we've got a lot that we're working towards. We're also continuing to build. We are looking at, you know, how we create smarter tools for some of our more traditional partners like YouTube, you know, and optimizing as well as, you know, giving the brand safety and suitability side of things. But we've got lots of, I think let's speak in a couple of months and I'll tell you exactly what we're going to do, but there's a lot coming up. We've got the Brand Safety Summit first, which is, you know, in a couple of months, and there's going to be hopefully lots of really positive stories to share with the market as the months on.
Great stuff, big year ahead.
I hope so.
Great stuff, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Life in Digital. If you want to know more about our guest or any of the topics that we covered today, you can find out more in our show notes and on our website. This podcast was brought to you in partnership with our friends at The Digital Voice. Remember to rate and review wherever you're listening, and we'll catch you next time on Life in Digital. See you soon.